Hour number three of Sports Talk begins with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Once again, we head to the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. It's always a pleasure to say hello to our good friend John McClain in the Houston Chronicle. You can follow his work at TexasSportsNation.com. A fantastic follow on Twitter at McClain underscore on underscore NFL. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. And I hope everybody so far is safe and sound in your neck of the woods.
They are, and I feel hope the same thing for you guys.
Yes, sir. So as we get closer and closer to the virtual draft, it seems as though there is a very specific concern, one, of people letting IT people into their house to get all the equipment installed, and then also the IT people don't seem to be so fired up about going into a bunch of different homes to make sure they're ready. What do you think of all this?
I don't blame them, because you can be asymptomatic and not show any signs of having the coronavirus, but you can have it. And all the experts say that. So are they going to get special testing with quick results, which is not fair at all, because there's people that have it that are showing signs of symptoms that can't get tested. That would look terrible for the NFL. It would look terrible for politicians. Like here in Houston, like so many other states, not all of them, but most of them, they have, if you're not an essential business, you got to be closed. Well, the NFL is not an essential business, so they can't go to their facilities or their stadiums. That's why they got to do it like this. But I don't, you know, are they going to equip the IT guys in hazmat suits that could be used at hospitals? They're going to have to be really careful fighting that battle in the court of public opinion, because it looks like the NFL would be getting special treatment, and you cannot have that go on at such a critical time in our nation's history. But I don't blame teams not wanting, like a head coach or GM, people coming in their house, and I don't blame the people having to go in there and fortify their internet. I don't blame them for being worried either.
John, do you think we should have the draft in late April?
I have thought all along, yes, they should have it, because there's no reason not to, except what we're talking about right now. People are worried about, some coaches and GMs are worried about being on Zoom and having Zoom get hacked. Well, they've been using Zoom to interview players, to meet with each other. They've been using FaceTime. They've been using Skype. Can a good hacker get into all that? But, of course, a lot of them are paranoid. I know the Steelers would like to have another three rounds to draft. That's not happening. And I think we're going to look back on this, and the teams that usually do a good job will do the best job. The teams that don't will be the ones that don't do a good job, because that's just their nature. And I'll say this, the ones that did the best job in the fall and the one of going to games and watching tape and talking to coaches, trainers, strength and rehab people, it's like doing an investigative story. NFL general managers, scouts, personnel people, they got to call on their sources to give them good information about prospects. Like if you call John and you say, so tell me this, what's Jimmy's strength and Jimmy's weaknesses? And if John trusts you, he'll tell you. If he doesn't trust you, he's not going to tell you the truth, and you got to be careful.
Do you think there's any merit to having three extra rounds?
I don't think so, because right now, I say this every year, Jimmy, you don't want to be a seventh-round pick. You would rather not be taken in the seventh round and have multiple teams interested in you as an undrafted free agent. Then you got a chance to get a little more money. Remember when Arian Foster came out of Tennessee, the several teams, including the Texans, Saints, and Jets, wanted him, and the Texans gave him a little more signing bonus and a multi-year deal, and it turned out to be one of the best moves in franchise history. And so that's why the people that do the best jobs, they start talking to those potential free agents after the first day of the draft, after the second day, and as I get down to the third day, they're calling them saying, you know, hey, if Jimmy doesn't get drafted, we're going to take him, and telling the agent, And so those agents that have multiple choices, they're a whole lot better off than the guys that get drafted in those late rounds.
John, do you think that teams should get a little bit extra time for their draft pick?
Now, I do like that one. I think that they used to have more time. I think they should get 15 minutes instead of 10. There's contingencies for everything. You know, if Jerry Jones, if his, wherever Jerry is in his kitchen, you know, you don't have to be at your house. You can be at a site, somebody else's house, if that's where you've been working. And one thing we're not clear on, the league hasn't told them, how many people can they be with them if they practice social distancing? Can you have your head coach and general manager, your head of personnel, while all your scouts are on Zoom with one of you, and the prospects that you're interested in that you want to talk to, they're on another Zoom? And so I like the idea of giving them more time. Considering the way the draft is spread out over 3 days, why not? The NFL Network and ESPN do a great job of analyzing the draft and doing features. One of the things I'm fired up about watching it on TV at home is I'll get to see those. When I'm at the Texans, and I like this part and I'll miss this part, but one of the best things about draft days is getting to BS with all your friends in the media and the PR people with the teams, and because you don't get that chance in off season except for the draft. So I'll miss that. And when I'm doing that, I don't get to pay attention to the feature stories and information. So I'm really pumped about that opportunity. And also fascinated about how they're going to pull this off. I think the viewership will be a record viewership. And I think it will be fascinating. And I think when it's over, we're going to look back and say, wow, ESPN, NFL Network, they did a really good job, because they always do.
You are 10 mock drafts into the season. Can you see a light at the end of the tunnel?
Yeah, the only one I care about is the last one, which will be Tuesday before the draft. If I went back over everything, I might actually get a few of them right. I don't do that because I'm worried that I didn't. The most I ever got in a mock draft, and that was the only one that it counts, is the last one. One year when I was covering the Oilers, I got 12. Usually it's in single digits. And, you know, a couple of picks up high that screws everything up and your whole draft mm-hmm. goes down the toilet. So I have fun doing it. They get a lot of hits on our website, Texas Sports Nation, so I like doing it for that. And I do try to change them up. I've had my top three picks the same because I've changed a couple, but Joe Burrow and Chase Young, first two picks, they're a lock. The key is, can Detroit at number three convince Miami and the Chargers that one of the others trying to trade up to get, say, Tua Tagovailoa, and get one of them to make a trade? And either way, they should still be able to get a great player like cornerback Jeff Okuda or outside linebacker Isaiah Simmons. So I think the trading will start there. And I can't remember if I told you guys this last week, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself. Something to keep in mind about this draft: there's not going to be an off-season program. Players are not going to get to work with coaches on the field. But for rookies, that is the most important thing about their orientation into professional football, are the OTAs, organized team activities, the rookie minicamp, the veteran minicamp, and they're not going to get that. They might get half of the training camp. They might get two preseason games. There's contingencies for no training camp, for the season being delayed, for the season not being played. Nobody wants to hear that. So will teams with a lot of picks start to trade them for next year's picks, or will they look to trade them for veterans? Because missing all this time of on-field instructions is not going to hurt veterans while it will rookies. Miami has 14 picks. I'm guessing when the draft's over, they will not have drafted 14 players. So I'm guessing they will package picks to move up. They might package picks for next year where they already got 2 1s and 2 2s, counting the Laramie Tunsil trade with the Texans. So that's something that I'm really eager to see how teams operate, knowing that their rookies are going to get off to slow starts.
You've got six teams that don't have a first-round draft pick in Buffalo, Chicago, the Texans, the Colts, Rams, and Steelers. Who do you think would be the most likely, or do you think there would be more than one you would put in that group that would want to trade back in, perhaps into the second half of the first round?
I think it would depend on how high you're picking. The Texans, for instance, have the eighth pick in the second round. That came in Arizona trade for DeAndre Hopkins. They also have their second-round pick, 57th overall. It's a really deep draft for receivers. Say there was a receiver that they just have to have. Now, there's three in a class by themselves, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and Henry Ruggs. And so most of us are picking them to be gone in about 10, 11, and 12, somewhere in the 10 to 15 range. Well, what if one of them just happened to slip and it was down to about 20? Would a guy like Bill O'Brien say, I'll give you two twos and a three, or two twos and a four, or two twos and a four next year, and you can still get the player you want, or you've already had a number one pick? You know, would they trade back with Miami? Miami has the 26th pick in the first round that did belong to Texas. Might they trade back for that if somebody like Love slipped? Or say they love Justin Jefferson from LSU, and he dropped. Most people have him going to Philadelphia. But what if he dropped? So, yeah, I could see guys doing that, especially at a time like this when you might not want as many draft choices.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. He joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. We'll get a break. More with John coming up as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
If we were a sports car, we'd be red, fast, and expensive. 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, as you listen to Sports Talk, he joins us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
John, Tom Brady on Howard Stern said that when asked about could he have done what he did without Belichick, he said, I don't believe I would have been able to do that, but I feel vice versa as well. He said, I can't do his job. He can't do mine. He said he also probably knew before the start of last season that he was going to leave New England. And he also said that it was time. I accomplished everything that I could. Did he say anything that surprised you?
Nothing at all. I mean, he's exactly right. They both brought out the best in each other. Greatest coach in history, greatest quarterback in history, and I don't think either one of them would have been without the other. One of the things that I think he wanted out of there is Bill Belichick didn't go out of his way to give Brady a lot of talent. You didn't see every number one pick be used in the first round. When Peyton Manning was in Indy, and Bill Polian was the general manager, he gave him skill position players in the first round almost every year. And it was like Belichick told Brady, you know, go ahead and make chicken salad out of chicken, you know what, and he was able to do that. I was watching a replay last night on NFL Network of that great Super Bowl in 17 here, in which the Falcons and Kyle Shanahan, the offensive coordinator, blew that 28-point lead, whatever it was, and how great Brady was. And every time you look up, he's throwing to Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Martellus Bryant. The Gronk was out injured. So it's amazing what Brady accomplished without having players that you would say, man, that guy's a great receiver. And so I would imagine one of the reasons he wanted to go to Tampa, he is playing with a coach, Bruce Arians, who is the opposite of Belichick. Now, Bruce Arians never won big like Belichick, and I think Belichick's personality, he rides those guys. They said he used to ride Brady like crazy because other players would go, whoa, if he's riding the number one player like that, I better get toe the line. And so there was method to his madness. But now he goes with Bruce Arians, a player's coach. He's going to make it more fun. He's got two great receivers and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, two good enough tight ends in Cameron Brate and O.J. Howard. And it might be a lot of fun, but they also might not even win their division because New Orleans is still the best team.
How far can Brady take Tampa Bay in those new uniforms?
A lot of people want to go back to those originals. I thought those originals were putrid because it reminded you of one of the worst teams in the history of pro football. But I didn't, you know, I looked at those uniforms, Jimmy, and I'm thinking, well, now where are the changes? There must have been subtle changes because it didn't look a whole lot different to me. And I think that they'll like those uniforms a whole lot better since Tom Brady's going to be wearing number 12.
What did you think of the new looks for the Rams, as there's been so much talk about just the logo, as well as with what we've seen now, I guess, with the Falcons, who they missed another opportunity to go back to the red, which I think they need to do. What do you think?
I agree with you. The Rams, I thought the Rams and the Chargers' original uniforms were so distinctive and good. I don't know why they didn't go back to the future. Go wear those same things. Nobody disliked those uniforms. It's instant recognition when you see the Ram and then you see the lightning bolt. And the reason they change them, of course, it's all about money. The money doesn't go to the team, it goes to the league, and then they get a distribution, and that distribution is big because one reason they play in Mexico and Europe is all about the sales of their gear. And you see more and more people wearing it. I was amazed when I was in London this past season. I'd see fans wearing Earl Campbell jerseys with the Oilers. You'd see them with Bart Starr jerseys with the Packers. So then they weren't old and used. It looked like that they had ordered them. And it was 80,000 people, and probably half of them were wearing jerseys. And so that's why they do it. And when you change the uniform, people all want to rush out and buy all the new stuff. That's the way it's supposed to be.
John, you wrote within the last week about the passing of former Oilers coach Eddie Biles. You said that he made covering football a lot of fun. How did he go about doing that?
Well, that was not me saying that covering, because when he was head coach, he was terrible, and it was not fun. But when he was the defensive coordinator playing for Bob Phillips, it was a lot of fun because they had great defenses. When he was the defensive coordinator, he had Hall of Fame end Elvin Bethea, nose tackle Curly Culp, outside linebacker Robert Brazil, and it was their misfortune during what we call the Love You Blue era of Bum Phillips and Earl Campbell to be the second-best team in the NFL. Unfortunately for them, the Steelers and the Steel Curtain defense, they played in the same division, and they lost AFC championship games at Pittsburgh after the 78 and 79 seasons. And one of the best stories that a lot of people don't know about, in 1979, the Oilers played in a divisional round at San Diego. Don Coryell, had Dan Fouts at quarterback, Kellen Winslow at tight end. He had Wes Chandler. He had Charlie Joyner. Winslow and Joyner and Fouts are in the Hall of Fame. They were favored by 20 because the Oilers did not have quarterback Dan Passerini, running back Earl Campbell, or their leading receiver Kenny Burrow. They had a backup quarterback, Gifford Nielsen, who was a better sportscaster after his career was over than he was as a quarterback. So they also had a backup running back who was so hurt they had to shoot him up. He didn't know what state he was in. And they were 20-point underdogs, and they won. And one reason they won is they figured out that Dan Fouts, when he was under center, if he was going to run the ball, he would put his right foot a couple of inches to the right, his toes. His heel wouldn't move. And the middle inside linebacker, Greg Bingham, would see that, and he would yell, Army, letting his teammates know they were going to run. And if Fouts kept his foot straight, it meant he was going to drop back, and he would yell out, Air Force. And their strong safety, Vernon Perry, intercepted four passes, which is still an NFL record. And they pulled off one of the biggest upsets in history. And that is still the biggest football victory in our city's history, and will be unless the Texans finally win an AFC championship game and go to the Super Bowl.
John, we talked with Kim Mulkey at the start of last hour. She's a part of this big and really decorated class that's going into the Basketball Hall of Fame. It also includes Rudy Tomjanovich. What are your thoughts on Rudy T getting the call from the Hall?
Well, it is a great class, not just because of them. And one of the coolest videos I've ever seen, I watched it when Kim Mulkey went back to her house in suburban Waco, and she lives in a mansion. on a street with mansions, and somebody in the back seat, probably her daughter, was filming this. As they got to the house, neighbors were all in the yard clapping for her, and they put up all kind of congratulations in her yard and their yard. And, of course, she was moved to tears. And then they shot one later when Kim was in the yard facing the street with her family. Fans just drove up and down the street, waves and waves of cars, wearing Baylor stuff, honking, waving at her, congratulating her. And she deserves it. She deserved it as a player. Her record as a player and as assistant coach and head coach is phenomenal. And I'm glad she's going in. Rudy Tomjanovich, great player at Michigan, really good player of the Rockets, has been a scout, assistant coach, head coach, won two championships. It's about time. The nincompoops that kept him out for so long should be ashamed.
Besides Mach 11.0, what are you working on?
Well, I don't worry about that until Monday, and I just saw from the boss at some point we got to do a 7-round mock on just the Texans pick. Thank God we don't have to pick every team. I'm writing a column for tomorrow on David Johnson, running back from Arizona, including the Hopkins trade, how he's expected to fit in. And we have a lot of stuff on Texas Sports Nation, and we're still coming up with ideas, and we have a special coronavirus section every day that's doing gangbusters. I'm really proud of the Chronicle. No layoffs, no furloughs. Actually, we got bonuses on this check, 22,000 Hearst employees. And so things are going really well for us. And thank you guys for letting me come on. Stay safe and make sure you keep your distance from people.
You as Thanks, well, John. Thank you. That's John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. Thank you. That's joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline.